National Broadcasting Company present, transcribed, Sir Ralph Richardson in Theatre Royal.
This is Ralph Richardson. Our play today is based on a story by Henry James. Henry James, one of America's greatest writers, though born in America, spent a great deal of his life abroad, and his stories, like this one, are often set in Europe. A successful novelist, Henry James had a lifelong ambition to achieve equal success as a playwright. During his lifetime, he failed. But perversely, since then, several of his tales have been dramatized by other hands into successful plays. You might perhaps recall that I myself appeared in a film version of one of those stories called The Heiress. But now we present to you our adaptation of another work by Henry James, The Aspen Papers. The world has long recognized Jeffrey Aspen for what he was, perhaps the greatest of American poets. But I still think it was the English critic John Cumnor and I who had recognized him the most. Our edition of his collected works had not merely been definitive, it had been a landmark in literary history. Jeffrey Aspen had died young. In that, he resembled Byron, whom he resembled in many ways, and whose death had occurred at almost the same date. So that when I first heard that Juliana Bordereau was still alive in Venice, it was almost as if I'd heard of the survival of Lady Hamilton. But it was not her memories of the poet that interested me. It was the rumor that she still had in her keeping the letters and the literary papers which Aspen had left to her when he died.
But all this fuss about a few old letters and papers, one would think they contained the answer to the riddle of the universe.
My dear lady, if I had to choose between that precious solution and a bundle of Jeffrey Aspen's letters, I know which would appear to me the greater boon.
Jeffrey Aspen. Oh, after all, he was a good poet, but
one doesn't defend one's God. One's God is in himself a defense.
But what makes you think that she won't let you see the papers? Have you asked her?
My dear lady, as I happen to know, the old woman won't have her relics or tokens so much as spoken of. They're personal, delicate, intimate.
But how do you know that?
James Cumnor wrote to her more than once. At last he had a reply, presumably dictated to her niece. Miss Bordereau has none of Mr. Aspen's literary remains, and if she had, she wouldn't have dreamt of showing them to anyone.
Then why all this trouble if she hasn't any papers?
But of course she has. You can see that from her reply, calling him Mr. Aspen. One doesn't talk about Mr. Shakespeare. Mr. Aspen proves familiarity, and familiarity implies possession of mementos, of tangible objects. As a literary critic, used to the finer shades of meaning, I can't tell you how that mister affects me. It bridges a gulf of 70 years.
Gracious, can she be as old as all that? Over 90?
But she must be. It's 70 years since Jeffrey Aspen died.
But if she refuses to part with the papers...
I must get round her somehow by ingratiating diplomatic arts, hypocrisy, duplicity, my only chance. I'm sorry for it. There's no baseness that I wouldn't commit for Jeffrey Aspen's sake. I shall have to take tea with her, then worm myself into her circle.
But, my dear, she hasn't got a circle. She's much too old. And after all, I do know Venice. No, there's only one way you can possibly get to know her.
And what's that? Get to know her niece?
You know the palazzo where they live. It's decayed and shabby in a poor part of the town. In fact, they're not so well off as they might be. Very well, then. Get them to take you in on the footing of a lodger.
A lodger? Good heavens. But of course. palazzo where the Miss Bordereau lived was indeed decayed and past its best. It was large and imposing, but it showed every evidence of neglect. It was situated on a small canal in a part of Venice that was no longer either well-known or fashionable. There was just one feature about it which gave me the hint I needed. It was one of the few houses in Venice which could boast of a garden. It was on that lucky fact that I based my plea. I was shown into a spacious, shabby parlor with a fine old painted ceiling under which a strange figure sat alone at one of the windows. I was face to face with Julia Arna of Aspen's most exquisite lyrics. And yet, not really face to face. She had over her eyes a horrible green shade which served almost as a mask and created the thought of some ghastly death's head lurking behind it. The divine Juliana as a grinning skull. The vision hung there until it passed. Then it came to me that she was tremendously old, so old that death might take her at any moment before I should have had time to compass my end.
Our house is very far from the center, but the little canal is very comme il faut.
It's the sweetest corner of Venice, and I can imagine nothing more charming.
And you wish to take rooms here as a lodger?
You really must excuse me. It was the sight of your garden that gave me the courage to be so unconventional. I've fallen in love with the whole place, and I really felt that I must take the risk of offending you. Of course, I'll give you the necessary references.
If you're so fond of a garden, why not go where there are plenty to choose from?
It's the idea of a garden in the middle of the sea.
This isn't the middle of the sea. You can't so much as see the water.
But, my dear madam, I came to the gate in my gondola.
Yes, if you've got a gondola. It's many years since I was in one.
It would be a great pleasure to put mine at your service, madam.
I never go out. But you may have as many rooms here as you like, if you'll pay me a good deal of money.
I'll pay with pleasure, and of course in advance, whatever you think proper to ask me.
Well then, 1,000 francs a month.
Yes, of course. I'd found it surprisingly easy to get myself installed in the house, but that appeared to be as far as I was likely to succeed. For the next 6 weeks, I saw virtually nothing of either of my neighbors. Miss Juliana, I could understand, for keeping to herself, but Miss Tina, the niece, proved no less elusive. Every day I had flowers sent up to their rooms, when once the garden had been put under cultivation, but not so much as a note acknowledged that they had been received. Indeed, for a plain and rather pathetic spinster, Miss Tina maintained a really remarkable reserve. It was not until one evening in July, when I came home much earlier than usual, that I surprised her in the garden.
You've made the garden very beautiful.
But you never come out to enjoy it. You hide away while I'm on the premises. Well, I know that, but I'd hoped you'd peep out a little at other times. You and your poor aunt are worse off than Carmelite nuns in their cells.
Before you came, we weren't so private. But I've never been out in the garden at night before. Of course, it was never so nice.
Never, with all these flowers. And by the way, you've never thanked me for the flowers that I've sent you each day.
I didn't know they were for me.
Well, they were for both of you.
But why should you be so kind to us? Why do you want so much to know us?
Now, that question's your aunt's, isn't it? You'd never have asked it if you hadn't been put up to it.
She didn't tell me to ask you, though she did tell me to come out tonight. She often does, only I don't like to leave her.
But is she so weak, then? Is she really failing?
She's been rather worse lately. Sometimes she sits so still, I almost think that she's died. She never eats anything. I can't understand how she keeps her strength. But she still gets up every day and clings to as many of her old habits as possible.
Must make life very worrying and quiet for you.
Yes, it's a lot quieter than it used to be. Well, we must be getting in. It's late. Do you study when you go to your room? I mean, read or write?
Oh, I generally read in bed. Poetry very often. 9 times out of 10, it's a book by Geoffrey Aspen.
Oh, we read him. We have read him. Oh,
he's my poet of poets. I know him almost by heart.
Oh, by heart, that's nothing. My aunt used to know him.
My dear lady, He died 100 years ago.
My aunt's 150.
But why didn't you tell me sooner? Oh, I should so like to ask her about him. It would be fascinating, her knowing him.
She wouldn't like that. She never talks about him now.
Has she a portrait of him? They're very rare.
I don't know what she has. She keeps her things locked up. Will you tell me something? Do you write?
Yes, I write, but I don't talk about it in the same breath as Geoffrey Aspen.
Do you write about him? Do you pry into his life?
Now, that's your aunt's question again, isn't it? It can't be yours.
Please tell me.
Yes, I've written about Geoffrey Aspen, and I'm looking for more material. In heaven's name, have you got any?
Santa Dio.
She hurried into the house and out of sight. Somehow I felt that I might count on her in the last resort, but for the present she was visibly alarmed. The proof of it was she began to hide again. To bring matters to a head, I stopped sending up my daily bunches of flowers. Even so, it was a fortnight before I saw her again.
It's my aunt. She wants to talk to you, she says. She wants to get to know you better.
But I thought you told me that she wanted to be more and more alone.
Well, people are often capricious when they're old.
Oh, that's true. Have you told her what I said the other night about Geoffrey Aspen, that I'm looking for material?
If I had, she would never have sent for you. She never speaks of him, no. No, I told her nothing.
The old woman was sitting in the same place in which I'd seen her last, in the same position, with the same green shade over her eyes.
About the beautiful flowers. You sent us so many, I ought to have thanked you for them before. But I don't write letters.
I'm afraid you haven't had many of late, but I'll send you some again immediately.
I suppose you could sell them, those you don't use. I dare say they wouldn't give you much for them, but you could make a bargain.
I let my gardener dispose of them, madam.
When you came here first, you offered me the use of your gondola.
But of course, madam. But I didn't know you went out much at present.
I don't. But why don't you take Tina out in it and show her the place?
But, Aunt, what do you want to do with me? I know all about the place.
Then go with him and explain. Haven't we heard all about the changes that have been these last few years? You ought to see them, and at your age, I don't mean because you're so young, you ought to take the chances that come. Take her to the piazza. It used to be very pretty. Let her look at the shops. She can take some money and buy what she likes.
But, Aunt, perhaps he doesn't want to take me.
Madam, it'll be a very great pleasure. My gondola will be here tonight.
In a moment, we continue Theatre Royal, starring Sir Ralph Richardson.
Have you heard Sunday with Garraway, the program with a little bit of everything interesting and a lot of easy entertaining talk by Dave Garraway himself? Yes, the subject covered are many, and the people on the other end of the Garraway interviews are famous names from all over the world. Tonight, you'll detect a definite sea motif when Rachel Carson, author of The Sea Around Us, and Hans Haas, who wrote the best-selling Men and Sharks, discuss their specialties with Dave. And then there are more words in the literary line from Mrs. Ellen Borden Stevenson, sponsor of Poetry Magazine and long a contributor to the arts. Other Garraway guests include bandleader Woody Herman and chanteuse Mabel Mercer. And there's even a surprise contributor, a man who's finally done what many have failed to accomplish, build a better mousetrap. Hear him tell about it. And hear all the other unusual Garraway guests, and a bit of the unusual from Mr. G himself. All Sunday with Garraway on NBC.
We now continue Theatre Royal, starring Sir Ralph Richardson.
It was a strangely intimate journey that Miss Tina and I made that evening down the Grand Canal to the Piazza San Marco. She had forgotten the splendor of the great waterway on the clear summer evenings, and how the sense of floating between the marble palaces and reflected lights disposed the mind to freedom and to ease. She was more than pleased. She was transported. The whole thing was an immense liberation. So was the glitter of the lights and the music in the piazza as we sipped our coffee at Florian's.
I've found out what's the matter with my aunt. She's afraid you'll go.
But what's put that into her head?
Well, she wants you not to. She wants you to stay.
I suppose you mean on account of the rent?
Yes.
Well, I've no intention of leaving. I have my reasons for wishing to stay. The other evening, I almost told you how I wished that you'd help me to make them good.
I can't do that without being false to my aunt. She'd never consent to show you what you want to see. She's been asked before, written to, and it always makes her fearfully angry.
And she has papers of value?
Yes, she has everything. She treasures them. She will never show them to anyone. On account of something ages ago, before I was born.
You mean something that Geoffrey Aspen's letters and papers are the papers she has to refer to?
I dare say. I've never looked at them.
Does she have them out often?
Not now, but she used to. She's very fond of them.
In spite of their being compromising?
Compromising?
Well, I mean containing painful memories.
Oh, I don't think there's anything painful.
You don't think there's anything to affect her reputation?
Why should there be? Do you think she once did something bad?
Oh, heaven forbid that I should say so. It's none of my business anyway. Besides, even if she did, that was in another age, in another world. But why doesn't she destroy the papers?
Oh, she loves them too much.
Even now, when she may be near her end?
Perhaps when she's sure that she is, she will.
Mercy on us. You don't think that she'll have done anything tonight?
I don't know. She's very cunning.
Are you trying to frighten me?
Of course not. In any case, she loves them. She loves them.
But if she doesn't intend to destroy them, she must have mentioned them in her will. Has she made one? Do you know?
I believe so. She had her lawyer round once and some people came in to act as witnesses. They didn't ask me, though.
That means that you must be the legatee, surely. She must have left the Aspen papers to you.
If she has, it'll be on very strict conditions.
Of course, of course. And you'll have to abide by the terms.
I'll do what I can to help you.
After what Miss Tina had said, for the next few days, I was on tenterhooks. I almost felt that it was her duty to keep me informed, to let me know definitely that her aunt had still not sacrificed her treasures. But as she gave no sign, I lost patience, and I determined to put the case to the very touch of my own senses. I sent late one afternoon to ask her if I might pay the ladies a visit. I was told that Miss Juliana was willing to receive me in the sala.
Have you come to tell me that you'll take the rooms for 6 months more?
Oh, dear madam, what an imagination you have. I'm a poor devil of a writer who lives from day to day. How can I take palaces by the year?
You write books, don't you sell them? What do you write about?
Well, about the books of other people. I'm a critic.
What other people?
Oh, better ones than myself. Great writers mainly, great philosophers and poets of the past. Those who are dead and gone and can't, poor darlings, speak for themselves.
And what do you say about them?
I say, they sometimes attach themselves to very clever women.
Do you think it's right to rake up the past?
Oh, I don't know what you mean by raking up. How can we get at it unless we dig a little? The present has such a rough way of treading it down.
Oh, I like the past, but I don't like critics.
Neither do I. But I like their discoveries.
Aren't they mostly lies?
The lies are what they sometimes discover. They often lay bare the truth.
The truth is God's. It isn't man's. We'd better leave it alone. Who can judge of it? Who can say?
We're terribly in the dark, I know.
Do you know much about curiosities?
About curiosities?
About antiquities. The gimcracks that people pay so much for today. Do you know what kind of prices they bring?
What, do you want to buy something?
No, I want to sell. This miniature. I'd only part with it for a good price.
But what a striking face. Do tell me who it is.
He's an old friend of mine. But I'm afraid to mention his name, lest you've never even heard of him, critic as you are. I know the world goes fast. He was all the fashion when I was young.
I seem to recognize the face. Wasn't he a writer? Surely Up to it.
It's only a person who'd know him for himself that would give me my price. Thank you.
Oh, then you have a price.
I know the least I would take. I thought you might know what I should be able to get.
Oh, it's a beautiful painting, whoever it is. And if you do decide to sell it, I hope you'll remember me. I should like to buy it, if I can afford it.
Hmm. What did you talk to my niece about the other evening?
I could hardly betray a lady's confidence.
Her confidence? Has my niece confidence?
Why, here she is. She can tell you herself. Have you confidence, Miss Tina? Your aunt would like to know.
Not in her. I haven't, sitting at an open window like that.
I know what I'm about. I'm not losing my mind, though I dare say you'd like to think so. Oh, very well, then. Move me.
Well, you must excuse me, madam. I'll bring you an opinion about the miniature.
The miniature?
What do you know about it, my dear? You needn't mind. I've fixed my price.
And what may that be?
£1,000.
£1,000? Gracious.
Well, is that what she talks to you about?
I went out of the house and walked far, far as the piazza, where my restlessness declined to quit me. At last, I took my way home again, getting gradually lost in the maze of passages, so that it was long past midnight when I reached my door. The sala upstairs was as dark as usual, and my lamp, as I crossed it, found nothing satisfactory to show me. The door of the lady's apartment was closed. Miss Tina had probably gone to bed. Miss Tina. Miss Tina. The door of Miss Juliana's sitting room was open, and I could see beyond it the faintness of a taper. There was no sound. My footsteps caused no one to stir. As I came into the room, the light from my lamp fell on a bureau in the corner of the room. Could the papers be hidden in that? Could they? And if they were, had Miss Tina already found them? Found them for me? Had she perhaps left the door unlocked for me? Was the bureau also unlocked? Had she left that open too? I bent down to examine it.
Ah! You publishing scoundrel!
I can't now say what I stammered to excuse myself to explain. I went towards her to tell her that I meant her no harm. She waved me off with her old hands retreating in horror before me. The next thing I knew, she'd fallen back with a quick spasm as if death had descended on her into Miss Tina's arms. I left Venice next morning, directly on learning that my hostess had not succumbed to the shock that I had given her. The shock, I may also say, that she had given me. How in the world could I have supposed her capable of getting out of bed by herself? And I failed to see Miss Tina before going. I left her a note to say that I would be absent for a few days. I was away for a fortnight, during all of which time I never had an easy moment with my thoughts. The Aspen papers, by now they must have been destroyed. She would never have trusted them to anyone again. At last, I could stay away no longer. I returned to Venice only to learn that the old lady had died some days before, that she had already been buried. It was with very mixed feelings that I went to offer my sympathy to Miss Tina.
No, I don't blame you for anything. My aunt has been ill for a long time. It was inevitable that she should die sooner or later.
And the papers, the Aspen papers? She has destroyed them, of course.
No, she left them in my care. There are a great many of them, more than I suppose.
You mean you've got them? May I see them?
I don't think you can see them. I've got them, but I can't show them. She tried to burn them, but I prevented her.
You don't mean to say that you made her a deathbed promise?
No, it isn't a promise.
Well, what is it then? Why won't you let me see them?
She wanted to say something to me the last day, something very particular, but But she couldn't.
Haven't you any idea what it was? Can't you guess?
No, I've tried to think, but I don't know. I've thought of all kinds of things.
As for instance?
Well, that if you were a relation, it would be different.
A relation?
If you weren't a stranger, then it would be the same for you as for me. Anything that's mine would be yours, and you could do what you like. I shouldn't be able to prevent you, and you'd have no responsibility. I think I know what she wanted to tell me. That she wanted me to be happy. And if any person should be kind to me, should want... I don't know what to do or what to say. I'm too ashamed. I'd give you everything and she'd understand where she is. She'd forgive me.
I remember standing there and saying, it wouldn't do. It wouldn't do. Saying it pensively, awkwardly, grotesquely, while I avoided her eyes. The next thing I remember, I was downstairs and out of the house. So that was the price, to marry her. Marry her. Did she think I wanted it? Poor, deluded, infatuated, pathetic lady. Did she think that I'd ever considered making love to her to get the papers? Well, I'd been as kind to her as possible because really I liked her. But since when has that been a crime where a woman of such an age and such an appearance is concerned? Even so, I must do something to get the papers from her.
It was good of you to come and say goodbye.
Goodbye? But she stood there, in the middle of the room, with a face of mildness bent upon me, and her look of forgiveness, of absolution, made her angelic. It beautified her. She was younger. She was no longer a ridiculous old woman. She was transfigured. And while I gazed at her, as I'd never seen or thought of her before, I heard a whisper somewhere in the depths of my conscience. Why not? After all, why not? It seemed to me that I could pay the price. Still more distinctly than the whisper, however, I heard Miss Tina's own voice.
Are you going today? But it doesn't matter, for whenever you go, I shan't see you again. I don't want to.
What shall you do then? Where shall you go?
Oh, I don't know. I've done a great thing. I've destroyed the papers.
Destroyed them?
Yes. What was I to keep them for? I burnt them last night, one by one, in the kitchen.
One by one?
Yes. It took me a long time. There were so many.
This is Ralph Richardson again. This week, in our adaptation...